Are you kidding? No, Reacher said. I'm asking a question. You want to know where I get my squalene? That's what questions are for. They seek to elicit information. The old guy smiled. I carry it around with me. Where? You're looking at it. Am I? The old guy nodded. And I'm looking at yours. My what? Your supply of squalene. I haven't got any squalene, Reacher said. It comes from shark's livers. Long time since I was next to a shark. The old man shook his head. You see, the Soviet system was very frequently criticized, and believe me, I've always been happy to tell the truth about it. But at least we had education, especially in the natural sciences. C30H50. It's an acyclic hydrocarbon, which when hydrogenated becomes squalane with an A. Oof. You understand any of that? No, Reacher said. Not really. Squalene is an oil, the old guy said. It occurs naturally in only two places in the known biosphere. One is inside a shark's liver. The other is as a sebaceous product on the skin around the human nose. Reacher touched his nose. Same stuff? Shark's livers and people's noses? The old guy nodded. Identical molecular structure. So, if I need squalene to lubricate a watch, I just dab some off on my fingertip. Like this. He wiped his wet hand on his pant leg and extended a finger and rubbed it down where his nose joined his face. Then he held up the fingertip for inspection. Put that on the gear wheel, and you're okay. I see, Reacher said. You want to sell the Bolova? Reacher shook his head. Sentimental value, he said. From the army? The old guy said. You're ne kulturnye. He turned back to his task, and Reacher walked on. Happy Thanksgiving, Reacher called. There was no reply. He met Nagli a block from the shelter. She was walking in from the opposite direction. She turned around and walked back with him, keeping her customary distance from his shoulder.
Beautiful day, she said. Isn't it?
I don't know.
How would you do it?
I wouldn't, he said. Not here. Not in Washington, D.C. This is their backyard. I'd wait for a better chance someplace else.
Me too, she said. But they missed in Bismarck. Wall Street in 10 days is no good to them. Then they're deep into December, and the next thing is more holidays, and then the inauguration. So they're running out of opportunities. And we know they're right here in town.
Reacher said nothing. They walked past Bannon. He was sitting in his car. They arrived back at the shelter at noon, exactly. Stuyvesant was standing near the entrance. He nodded a cautious greeting. Inside the yard, everything was ready. The serving tables were lined up. They were draped with pure white cloths that hung down to the floor. They were loaded with food warmers laid out in a line. There were ladles and long-handled spoons neatly arrayed. The kitchen window opened directly into the pen behind the tables. The shelter hall itself was set up for dining. There were police sawhorses arranged so that the crowd would be funneled down the left edge of the yard. Then there was a right turn across the face of the serving area, then another right along the wall of the shelter and in through the door. Froelich was detailing positions for each of the general duty agents. 4 would be at the entrance to the yard, 6 would line the approach to the serving area, 1 would secure each end of the pen from the outside, 3 would patrol the exit line.
Okay, listen up, Froelich called. Remember, it's very easy to look a little like a homeless person, but very hard to look exactly like a homeless person. Watch their feet. Are their shoes right? Look at their hands. We want to see gloves or ingrained dirt. Look at their faces. They need to be lean. Hollow cheeks. We want to see dirty hair. Hair that hasn't been washed for a month or a year. We want to see clothes that are molded to the body. Any questions?
Nobody spoke.
Any doubts at all? Act first and think later, Froelich called. I'm going to be serving behind the tables with the Armstrongs and the personal detail. We're depending on you not to send us anybody you don't like, okay?
She checked her watch.
12:05, she said. 55 minutes to go.
Reacher squeezed through at the left-hand end of the serving tables and stood in the pen. Behind him was a wall. To his right was a wall. To his left were the shelter windows. Ahead to his right was the approach line. Any individual would pass 4 agents at the yard entrance and 6 more as he shuffled along. 10 suspicious pairs of eyes before anybody got face to face with Armstrong himself. Ahead to the left was the exit line. 3 agents funneling people into the hall. He raised his eyes. Dead ahead were the warehouses. 5 sentries on 5 roofs. Crosetti waved. He waved back.
Okay?
Frolic asked. She was standing across the serving table from him. He smiled. Dark or light? He asked.
We'll eat later. I want you and Nagley freelance in the yard. Stay near the exit line so you get a wide view.
Okay, he said.
Still think I'm doing well?
He pointed left. I don't like those windows. Suppose somebody bides his time all the way through the line, keeps his head down, behaves himself, picks up his food, makes it inside, sits down, and then pulls a gun and fires back through the window. She nodded.
Already thought about it. I'm bringing 3 cops in from the perimeter, putting one in each window, standing up facing the room.
That should do it, he said. Great job.
And we're going to be wearing vests, she said. Everybody in the pen, the Armstrongs too.
She checked her watch again.
45 minutes, she said. Walk with me.
They walked out of the yard and across the street to where she had parked her Suburban. It was in a deep shadow made by the warehouse wall. She unlocked the tailgate and swung it open. The shadow and the tinted glass made it dark inside. The load bay was neatly packed with equipment, but the back seat was empty.
We could get in, Reacher said. You know, fool around a little.
We could not.
You said it was fun fooling around at work.
I meant the office.
Is that an invitation? She paused, straightened up, smiled.
Okay, she said. Why not? I might like that.
Then she smiled wider.
Okay, she said again. Soon as Armstrong is secure, we'll go do it on Stuyvesant's desk, as a celebration.
She leaned in and grabbed her vest and stretched up and kissed him on the cheek. Then she ducked away and headed back. He slammed the tailgate, and she locked it from 40 feet away with the remote. With 30 minutes to go, she put her vest on under her jacket and ran a radio check. She told the police commander he could start marshaling the crowd near the entrance, told the media they could come into the yard and start the tapes rolling. With 15 minutes to go, she announced that the Armstrongs were on their way.
Get the food out, she called.
The kitchen crew swarmed into the pen, and the cooks passed pans of food out through the kitchen window. Reacher leaned on the shelter wall at the end of the line of serving tables on the public side. He put his back flat on the bricks between the kitchen window and the first hall window. He would be looking straight down the food line. A half turn to his left, he would be looking at the approach line. A half turn to his right, he would be looking into the pen. People would have to skirt around him with their loaded plates. He wanted a close-up view. Nagley stood 6 feet away, in the body of the yard, in the angle the sawhorses made. Frolic paced near her, nervous, thinking through the last-minute checks for the 100th time.
Arrival imminent, she said into her wrist microphone. Driver says they're 2 blocks away. You guys on the roof see them yet?
She listened to her earpiece and then spoke again.
2 blocks away, she repeated.
The kitchen crew finished loading the food warmers and disappeared. Reacher couldn't see because of the brick walls, but he heard the motorcade. Several powerful engines, wide tires on the pavement, approaching fast, slowing hard. A Metro cruiser pulled past the entrance, then a Suburban, then a Cadillac limo that stopped square in the gateway. An agent stepped forward and opened the door. Armstrong stepped out and turned back and offered his hand to his wife. Cameraman pressed forward. The Armstrongs stood up straight together and paused a beat by the limo's door and smiled for the lenses. Mrs. Armstrong was a tall, blonde woman whose genes had come all the way from Scandinavia a couple of 100 years ago. That was clear. She was wearing pressed jeans and a puffed-up, goose-down jacket a size too large to accommodate her vest. Her hair was lacquered back into a frame around her face. She looked a little uncomfortable in the jeans,
like she wasn't accustomed to wearing them. Armstrong was in jeans, too, but his were worn like he lived in them. He had a red plaid jacket buttoned tight. It was a little too small to conceal the shape of the vest from an expert eye. He was bareheaded, but his hair was brushed. His personal details surrounded them and eased them into the yard. Cameras panned as they walked past. The personal agents were dressed like Frolic. Black denim, black nylon jackets zipped over vests. Two of them were wearing sunglasses. One of them was wearing a black ball cap. All of them had earpieces and bulges at their waists where their handguns were. Frolic led them into the pen behind the serving tables. One agent took each end and stood with arms folded for nothing but crowd surveillance. The third agent and Frolic and the Armstrongs themselves took the middle to do the serving. They milled around for a second and then arranged themselves with the third agent on the left, then Armstrong, then Frolic, then Armstrong's wife on the right. Armstrong picked up a ladle in one hand and a spoon in the other, checked the cameras were on him, and raised the utensils high like weapons.
"Happy Thanksgiving, everybody!" he called.
The crowd swarmed slowly through the gateway. They were a subdued bunch. They moved lethargically and didn't talk much. No excited chatter, no buzz of sound. Nothing like the hotel lobby at the donor reception. Most of them were swaddled in several heavy layers. Some of them had rope belts. They had hats and fingerless gloves and downcast faces. Each had to pass left and right and left and right through the six screening agents. The first recipient looped past the last agent and took a plastic plate from the first server and was subjected to the full brilliance of Armstrong's smile. Armstrong spooned a turkey leg onto the plate. The guy shuffled along, and Frolic gave him vegetables. Armstrong's wife added the stuffing. Then the guy shuffled past Reacher and headed inside for the tables. The food smelled good, and the guy smelled bad. It continued like that for 5 minutes. Every time a pan of food was emptied, it was replaced by a new one passed out through the kitchen window. Armstrong was smiling like he was enjoying himself. The line of homeless people shuffled forward, the cameras rolled. The only sound was the clatter of metal utensils in the serving dishes and the repeated banalities from the servers.
"Enjoy. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming by."
Reacher glanced at Nagley. She raised her eyebrows. He glanced up at the warehouse roofs, glanced at Frolic, busy with her long-handled spoon, looked at the television people. They were clearly bored. They were taping a whole hour, and they knew it would be edited to 8 seconds maximum, with boilerplate commentary laid over it.
"Vice President-elect Armstrong served the traditional Thanksgiving turkey today at a homeless shelter here in Washington, D.C.
Cut to first-quarter football highlights. The line was still 30 people long when it happened. Reacher sensed a dull, chalky impact nearby, and something stung him on the right cheek. In the corner of his eye, he saw a puff of dust around a small, cratered chip on the surface of the back wall. No sound, no sound at all. A split second later, his brain told him, "Bullet. Silencer." He looked at the line, nobody moving. He snapped his head to the left and up. The roof. Cressetti wasn't there. Cressetti was there. He was 20 feet out of position. He was shooting. It wasn't Cressetti. Then he tried to defeat time and move faster than the awful slow motion of panic would allow him. He pushed off the wall and filled his lungs with air and turned toward Frolic as slowly as a man running through a swimming pool. His mouth opened and desperate words formed in his throat, and he tried to shout them out, but she was already well ahead of him. She was screaming, "Gun!" She was spinning in slow motion. Her spoon was loose in the air, arcing up over the table, glittering in the sun, spraying food. She was on Armstrong's left. She was jumping sideways at him. Her left arm was scything up to shield him. She was jumping like a basketball player going for a hook shot, twisting in midair. She got her right hand on his shoulder for a pivot and used the momentum of her left to turn herself around, face on to him. She drew her knees up and landed square on his upper chest. Breath punched out of him, and his legs buckled, and he was going down backward when the second silenced bullet hit her in the neck. There was no sound, no sound at all, just a bright, vivid, backward spray of blood in the sunlight, as fine as autumn mist.